The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
I am amazed that on a Friday there are this many students in the building. So welcome, and I hope this is a nice thing for you to be doing on Friday. I'm Ann Shallett. I direct our Women in the Law program. And I teach in our Women in the Law Clinic, and I teach a bunch of other things. But we let other people up here introduce themselves.
I'm Janie Schwan, and I'm with UW. I teach international law to first-year students, and I also teach courses on human trafficking, gender and labor migration, and international commercial arbitration.
My name is Daniela Kryam. I work with Professor Shallett. I'm the Associate Director of the Women in the Law Program. And I also teach a number of different classes, and next year I'll be teaching a class called Gender Inequality.
Hi everybody, I'm Adrienne Mockey, and I teach with Ann Shallett in the Women in the Law Clinic. I also teach some other courses. I've taught legal ethics and advanced women in the law. Did all of you get the handouts?
What the handouts do, or the main handouts, the ones with the blue on the top, is to explain what our Women in the Law program is in terms of the course listings, which is, of course, only one. Well, that's one of them. That's the one that says all courses in gender and the law. The other is gives you more of a conceptual basis for what we try to do in our gender-based curriculum, which I can talk a little. I'll just talk a teeny bit about in terms of the concept of it, because you have it in writing. But one of the things we know about how students learn is that some learn by listening to things, some learn by reading things. And information often has to be absorbed in multiple ways before it actually sinks in. That's true of all adult learners, not just particularly law students. As you probably know, one of the strengths of this law school is that it pays attention to multiple critical perspectives on the law. Doesn't take the law just as an abstract thing, and one of our perspectives is a gender perspective on law and on legal practice and on the work of lawyers. We see gender as deeply connected to other dynamics in society, to the way race operates or economic inequality operates. How sexual orientation and sexuality operate in the law. So you'll see that our the way we've structured our curriculum reflects that, and we've tried to do really three different things. Have some specialized courses in that focus on gender analysis in terms of theory, in terms of doctrine, in terms of particular substantive areas of the law. So that people who know that they're interested in this or don't know that they're interested in this but are interested in a particular topic can get a deep immersion in it. The second thing we do is try to identify courses for you in the curriculum that are called something different, like employment discrimination, but that we know both from the content of the course and from the people who teach it here. You'll do a lot of stuff around law relating to gender issues. And then we have some courses that, in terms of content, don't necessarily, in most places they would be taught without much attention to gender, but because of the people who we have on our faculty and their own interests and their own approaches, you will understand how that area of the law relates to issues that implicate gender in one way or another. So we're trying to get this information out to you. This is an advising session, so we don't want to talk too much. We can tell you about the particular courses we teach and what we focus on in those courses, but mostly we want to answer your questions about how you're thinking about paralegal education, what are the choices like? Because after the first year,
the first year doesn't give you much sense of that. It's all there for you. You have one elective, but that doesn't really help you think about the whole curriculum or think about what you want out of law school. So I teach feminist jurisprudence, which is one of our courses that focuses on gender. We do multiple types of analysis of the law in there. It is focused on how different debates within feminism, like what's the meaning of equality, what's the meaning of victimization, get developed through different strands of feminist theory. It's not a heavily doctrinal course, so you're not going to read many cases. You'll read lots of other kinds of legal materials. And it's good for people who have done lots of work in gender, like to have been a gender studies major as an undergraduate, or people who've never thought about it at all.
So this fall I'll be teaching two courses that deal with gender issues. One is my seminar on gender, labor, and the global economy. And in that course, I'm interested in looking at the intersection. Actually, migration should be part of the title too. Perfectly accurate. So I'm looking at the interplay between gender, labor, and migration. And so the idea behind the course is to look at the root causes of exploitative labor migration of women and how that's treated differently from labor migration of men. So looking at globalizing trends and their impact on this phenomenon, and to look at legal structures and how they do don't respond to the problem adequately. And then we also look at some case studies of this phenomenon in the domestic work sector and also in the sex industry and how law responds to it. A lot of the readings in this seminar are actually not law materials. It's very much an interdisciplinary approach to the topic. So I would say the majority of the readings that we do are actually from anthropology and sociology rather than law. And then the other course I'm teaching this fall is a larger course on human trafficking, which will look certainly at the trafficking of women. And that course will have a bit more of a doctrinal component to it, and that will look at the different legal frameworks that deal with trafficking specifically. Both international and regional frameworks. I'll incorporate some of the anthropological and sociological studies into looking at the causes of trafficking and reasons why interventions that countries have undertaken to deal with the problem haven't worked so well, and trying to assess why. We'll also look at specific issues in trafficking in the military context, trafficking into the private sector, context in terms of corporations and their involvement, complicity in trafficking. So we'll look at HIV and trafficking. So it'll be, a broad survey of issues related to trafficking.
I'm gonna talk a little bit about two classes. One of which is the class that I have been teaching up until now that somebody new will be taking over. Which is a class called Gender Perspectives Across the World. And that class serves as an introductory class for people who have an interest in gender and international issues. We have another course that will be offered in the spring called Gender, Cultural Difference, and Human Rights that's sort of very much focused on sort of women's rights. And for a lot of students who want an even more basic introduction into gender and international law or women's issues around the world, and who also might be thinking about whether that's something that they want to do with their law degree after they graduate. Gender Perspectives Across the World is a class designed as a very welcoming introduction to all of those questions and all of those issues from a feminist perspective. The fun part about that class is that it was designed for LLM students. So we actually have students who come here from all over the world specifically to take classes like this. We have students who come here just to study gender and law, for their LLM degrees, and but the JD students who take that class, I think, have a really good time, and they get to meet a lot of the international LLM students. And so it's a very, very fun class. So that's one. And then the class that I'll be teaching next fall is called Gender Inequality in the State. And that class is really a class for people who are interested in what's happening with gender and a lot of the current issues that are coming up because of the recession and the economic crisis. So starting to look at public policy issues like welfare, right, as more and more people are getting pushed onto welfare or onto food stamps or need assistance with housing, that kind of thing. How does gender play a role in how we design those policies and how we think of those policies and who gets benefits and who doesn't? And also really taking a good look at our tax policies, because one of the ways we make social policy in this country is through who gets taxed, right? Whether you get, for example, credits for childcare or you don't. Those sorts of issues that really have a big impact on women's lives and family lives, and often treat men and women quite differently in ways that are a little hard to identify unless you really stop and think about it. And so that's what we'll be doing in that class. I can also answer questions about classes for the professors aren't here, because I've talked to everybody about what their classes are going to be like. But we can come back for that.
So the real purpose of today, I think, is to give you a sense of the real opportunities coming up in the fall. If I can distract you for a moment, think just about the rest of your time here. I wanted to highlight our great clinical program, and that there are two clinics with an explicit focus on gender, the Women in the Law Clinic and the Domestic Violence Clinic. And there's separate information sessions and a whole procedure to get involved in those. But Ann and I both teach the Women in the Law Clinic, and I think that's a really great opportunity to tackle these very academic and theoretical issues through the representation of real clients. And our clinic does take second and third years. The process is winding down for next year, but to keep that opportunity in mind as you think about planning for not just next year, but possibly the year after. Now, I'll also probably be teaching a seminar in the spring with an advanced family law seminar with a focus on constitutional and federal laws that affect the family and the role of feminist theory as well in that class.
So, questions? Thoughts?
Yes, can you possibly talk a little bit about some of the family course offerings, family law?
We consider family law a basic gender course. It's amazing, when I went to law school, the person who taught family law said, what does it have to do with gender? And now, really, not just here, actually, every place people who teach it, well, not every place, most places people who teach it, understand that gender has been such a fundamental part of the formation of the family, the operation of the family, the way legal rules affect the family, that you couldn't possibly teach family law without thinking about gender. So we see family law as basic to that. Our basic family law course has wonderful people teaching it who are very, very attentive to the theoretical issues, the practical issues, and the kind of in-between issues of how doctrines that look like neutral doctrines play out differently in terms of gender, and then questions deeply related to gender, like sexual orientation and sexuality, and all of those questions. So we have our basic family law course, and it's a great course. All of our people teaching it are terrific. And we try to offer it, it doesn't always work, but we try to offer it five times over the course of the year. That's including the summer, so that the sections aren't too big. So even though it's a basic course, it has, every once in a while it doesn't work, or somebody gets over enrolled, or the timing doesn't work. But we try to make it a reasonably sized course for a big course. And almost everybody teaches it, but not just in an exam, with a good portion of what you're doing being an exercise of actually doing stuff around.
it's such an important issue, and people don't talk about it, is methods of assessment. And for those of you who are interested in reform of legal education, it's a very big issue now, and family-wise, one of the areas where we are, and many of our courses, almost nobody has just end. So this is like a really good part of the curriculum if you don't want to just an exam at the end. We have a bunch of upper level offerings in family law. Which are the ones we have? Sometimes some people think about domestic violence as like an upper level family law course. It's an upper level course in many things. But one of the things that's an upper level course in is family law, because so much violence happens in the family, and it gets treated differently within the family than it does in other areas of the law. And so it's really a deep immersion in both the law and other disciplinary approaches to domestic violence issues. Some people could look at reproduction in the law as an upper level family law course, though much reproduction, as we know, happens outside of the family. It does create a family, if you think about the family as the parent-child unit rather than the marital unit. And so in that sense, it is foundationally a family law course, because it has to do with issues about the creation of the decision about whether to create a family-child unit. Our other courses, all of our basic courses will deal with the family, because all of us come with a theoretical orientation which says, in order to understand gender issues, you have to look at what the state's doing, you have to look at what the economy and the market is doing, and so they're not courses about family law, but issues related to not just how the family operates, but the law of the family become critical issues. I know that in like Janie's course, and you know, even though the title, gender labor in the global economy, it has enormous amounts to do with the family, even though we wouldn't guess it. We have an upper level family law practice course, which is does not do a whole lot explicitly around gender issues, but does a lot around what standard middle class and above people experience family law as being. So if you're going into a family law practice, it would be a lot about property distribution, which is what most litigation is around, and has important implications in terms of gender, certainly around litigation around custody, how child support operates, how you negotiate, how you modify decrees, things like that. So very practice oriented. What am I missing?
I think that's it for the fall. And then in the spring, you should know that if you don't get into one of the family law sections in the fall, I see that they're filling up pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
There will be another section offered in the spring. So like Professor Shaw said, we want to make sure everybody gets a chance to take family law before they graduate, because we think it is so foundational and so important. And so there will be another big family law section in the spring. And then we're going to offer a couple of advanced specific family law classes in the spring that we're planning, and you know, things happen and professors rearrange. But one of the things that we're planning on offering, or hoping to be able to offer, is a course in comparative family law, which would be great if you've taken U.S. family law and you sort of understand how we think about the relationship between the family and the state. Looking then, particularly for those of you who are thinking about a practice that relates to gender issues outside of the U.S., looking comparatively at other family law systems and how that relates to gender, and also looking more at the role family law is playing in like globalization and these sort of big questions like that. This fall, we are offering a class, in the fall, called Immigration Issues, Employment, and Family, because so so many immigration issues are related to, it is the most common way in which people immigrate into the U.S. And so obviously there are really interesting and exciting issues there. And a lot of our graduates have gone on to practice in this area, in this sort of nexus between immigration and family law. It's a really interesting opportunity for people to do some real good.
And how is the sequencing for that work? Is family law like a prerequisite or a co-requisite, or is it just?
We generally don't have prerequisites at this school, which is something that the faculty love to complain about, but I think works to your benefit sometimes. So that means you can dive right in.
Okay.
I think that having taken American family law is always a benefit, but like I said, you can't get into it in the fall because it's full.
Yeah.
I would say also having taken immigration before you take immigration and family law would be a benefit, so if you can get into the immigration law class. And know that that's a class that we offer every year, so if you don't get to take it in this round, if you're at 1L right now, you can think about taking it your 3L year. I think for that class in particular, the people who I've talked to who have gotten the most out of that class have some background in American family law and have some background in immigration, and then I think they feel like they can take off. But I have also talked to people who didn't have either both of those or one of those, and they really enjoyed the class and learned a whole lot. So, and we say that about just about everything. All of our faculty know that inevitably in the room there's somebody who worked in that area as a paralegal and knows tons about it. There's somebody who's taken all of the classes and this is like the last class they're taking. And we also know that there's an absolute beginner in every group.
Yeah.
And so we know that.
It actually forces us to be better teachers because it forces us to make sure that we're talking about core concepts. And even when you get to an advanced level of anything, it's important to relate your work back to core concepts. So in certain ways it works for us because it forces us. If you think about it, it forces you to do that. It doesn't mean every law professor does, but we're all. The other thing related to that, it depends upon how you learn a lot. Some people learn better by diving into a very specific subject. Like if you wanted to do domestic violence before you did family law, certainly family law helps you understand a lot about domestic violence, but if you learn better by doing something very deeply and intensely and then working out, take those specific courses first and then do sort of work backwards or forwards to the more general courses, and then you'll get a deeper understanding of them because you see how the concepts operate in a very particular context.
Other questions?
So if we don't get into the family law, what do you suggest that we take if you know that you want to practice in the field of family law? So I know we have domestic violence and stuff, but what do you think is like the most basic to kind of start building that foundation to take? I kind of already answered it, but.
Because it's one of the ways, like if you understand like the basic feminist theories, sort of the approaches, sort of how we think about law, it then gets applied in lots of places, right? It gets applied to how you think about employment law, or how you think about welfare policy, or how you think about family law.
The way I teach feminist jurisprudence, there's a big bunch of stuff to introduce you to a range of issues, important themes in feminist theory, and a bunch of different theoretical approaches. And then the rest of the course is designed around what you're interested in and your work. And people get to know each other's work very intensely. And so if you're interested in certain particular family law issues, you can focus as much as you want, and the class will then focus around issues involving whichever aspects of family law kind of spark your fancy, whether or not it's marriage and who can get married, or what happens with child support, or what happens with custody, or
child welfare issues. I mean, we've had people focus on all of those different things.
One class we haven't talked very much about is Women with a Ministry.
That's a lot of family.
Which has a lot of family and life as well. And Women's Legal History takes the historical view, sort of looking at how legal doctrines around gender, around family, around employment have evolved over time. And the class goes up through about 1980. And really, I think if you like history at all, it's a great introduction to the field, because it goes through how women have fought for specific rights. And one of the first things that they really struggled to gain was the right to control their own property after they were married, which is a huge part of family law, and about the issues around family law, getting custody of their children. That was a big change in the law, where women were for many years not assumed to be people who got custody of kids. And so women really fought to have rules changed and over time. And so the class really looks at those issues. And so it gives you a good long view of sort of where the law is and how it changes over time and how it moves, and also what the role of activists is in doing that. So if you're a person who's interested in making change through law, it's a really interesting look, because you have to understand what's been tried before, where we've been, where people ran into, you know, huge barriers before. And so I think that's another really wonderful introduction to the field.
Professor Lockin's course in the spring.
Sure. I'm probably teaching advanced family law, and it's really it's a theory of policy class, but to look at the role of the family in the Constitution. So although you might talk about core constitutional concepts in your common law course, your equal protection course, there's an explicit focus on gender. I mean, we get the cases that are off on the footnotes in your common law books. And we also look at a few of the federal laws that explicitly deal with family law. So it has, we're looking at more than state policy. So although you might look at custody laws in your family law course, we'll look at some different federal issues that deal with custody. There's uniform laws trying to make custody easier to do. And it's very topic focused. And that's another class that I've had students who haven't taken family law, and that's okay, because you're kind of coming at it from a fresh perspective, and then when you take family law, you already have some of the theoretical background for why do we have this law, who's affected by it, what are the stereotypes and assumptions that the lawmakers have in making some of the laws.
Are there any courses that touch on doctrine issues? Yeah.
Family law does some.
Okay.
You could do it easily in feminist jurisprudence. I had a student this year who focused on adoption issues. We have a course generally in the spring on what we call children's rights or children in the law or something like that. And at least the person who's taught it for us for the last several years is very, very interested in adoption issues. And so I'm sure she does a whole lot on adoption in that course.
And we try to coordinate a little bit too. So for example, that class isn't being offered, I would probably cover more about child protection and adoption, because there is a federal structure for that. In the past, I haven't, because it's been so heavily covered in that other course.
And I guess I have another question. This might be ridiculous, but the classes that are numbered higher,
mm-hmm.
If you're a 1L going into your second year, can you take any of them? Okay.
I have no.
I don't know.
After 20 some odd years, I have no understanding of what the number is.
It's not like undergrad where, like, you know, about 400 you're locked out. No. You are now about to be able to do what you want after having been locked into the 1L curriculum. So yeah, at this point, unless there's a
prerequisite, which is extraordinarily rare in this school, like I know of none, or some classes are occasionally by consent of the instructor, and usually that means you have to go ask.
Do it.
And then, yeah, just go ask. That's literally the answer is, you know,
email
them and say, what do I have to do to get into this class? Those are the only barriers.
For those of you who are interested in feminist jurisprudence, I just found out that it says that it's been capped because they have the wrong number on there.
And how are you trying, will the system let us in?
So which class is that? I'm going to, as soon as this feminist jurisprudence, I'm going to call right after this meeting. I do not know how quickly it will be corrected. Send an email. If there's no way to put anything on the online system, send an email to the registrar's office saying that I said that it was going to be capped higher and you tried to register and you couldn't.
What is the new cap?
I don't know. Last year was 15, but I'm inclined to move it up to 20. It works better at 15, but if more people want to take it, I'll figure out each year I take more and more. it's good because if there is so much writing and so much interactive writing, people commenting on what other people have written and people developing their own writing through the course, that it's a challenge to figure out how to, or just, it's not even reading it's done so hard, it's organizing it that becomes the challenge. So I take larger numbers each year as I get better at the organizational component.
Did you guys have any questions about other activities besides, we don't want you just to go to class all the time. You know that an important part of the law school is that it's an interesting, exciting, busy, overly busy sometimes takes to be. Did you guys have any questions about some of the other activities or journals or how to get more writing done or how to things to do? I know, shortbread.
Let's find out tomorrow.
Let me, before you get the results, let me say this. I've been told. First of all, let me do writing. If you're doing writing because you like opportunities to write, it is not always easy for a student to figure out where those opportunities are in the law school, but we can help you. I mean, not just in terms of our courses, but in terms of knowing people who care a lot about and are very supportive of and help students write really, really good stuff. And the school is also very supportive at helping students get their work published. Which then leads to, if you're not just interested in the writing, but you're interested in having something on your resume that helps you, having a piece that's published is at least as, if not more, prestigious than being on a journal. If you are on a journal, it does not necessarily mean that one of your things will get published. I don't mean to knock down journals, though there's certainly many problems with law student journals every place throughout legal education, so it has nothing to do with our particular law journals. It's just the culture of law journals. But there are many ways to get collective experiences, because it's one of the nice things I think people like about being on a journal is you get to work with a group of people on a collective project. There are many ways to do that, and there are many ways to get the writing experience, and there are many ways to get opportunities. If what you like is the thought of editing law professors' work, which I don't think
that's the idea.
Journal work.
But should that be so, you can get many of those opportunities too. Like I have a piece, I have my students working all the time, and they give me many really good ideas about what to do and how to do it.
Yeah, so, and some of the other things to think about, you know, what I like to think of as beyond journal, we have some great student-run journals that are, some of the briefs are really fabulous and are putting out amazing work. And so what that means is that it's a great chance to actually work on editing and being part of one of the smaller journals. It's a little more intimate. You actually probably get to do more. Sort of small firm versus big firm kind of thing, right? Where there's, you know, a big, huge structure, you might not get to do exactly what you want, whereas in some of the smaller briefs, people are more than happy to have you, you know, do what you're good at and do what you want. They're great opportunities for getting their work published. Lots and lots of our students are publishing their work in the Human Rights Group. Human Rights Group publishes tons of stuff on gender, you know, as they get it. The Modern American is publishing more and more stuff on gender. I'm doing, you know, some really neat pieces coming out there. So I'd encourage you to think about some of the other structures and places. And then,
and you don't really have to do them as much side checking.
You can do some still, but not quite as much. But also, you know, many students publish papers that they write for classes. And so you can really think about that when you're, you know, right now I'm running a class right now where I have 9 students, and I think 6 of them are going to try and get their papers published. 3 of them are going to continue working on them. So I think it's really, it can be done. And we had over 45 student authors who got published last year. And that's something really that we're very, very proud of. And librarians are amazing and do a lot of work to help students.
And students win awards. There are all these essay contests out there. And I send my old feminist jurisprudence. I'm really sick of hearing from me because I sent them a notice about all of these contests in which they can enter their papers.
We run on
some of pride, money prizes.
Money prizes, $1,000 for the best essay, and you know, we get maybe 40 entries, but you know, 40 entries from all over the country. I mean, you can flood these places with, you know, and some of them have, you know, $500, $1,000, $2,000.
And it's not that helps with your legal education, but it's never been.
No. and to get the recognition and the award and everything.
I mean, so things like that really, and there's a lot of support for it, so do not become obsessed with it.
Yeah. Any last questions?
We continue to be available to answer questions. Professor Klein's office and the Women on the Wall Program's office is across the street at 4910. Angela Klein, who is here, who is our coordinator. Everybody adores her, students, faculty, everybody in the administration. She gets more done than anybody I know. And she will be a first year law student next year. So. So any, you know, even if it's not exactly gender related, come see us. We'll help you navigate all the broken systems as well as the ones that aren't broken.
Yeah.
Basically, people want to help you and you just know who to go to.
So the Women in the Law program, Andy and I have office hours every Tuesday from 2 to 4. And if you just email us ahead of time and let us know that you're coming. Literally, to talk about anything. I've had students come in to talk about, you know, they were having a hard time here at school. I've had students come in to ask about what classes they should take. I've students come in to talk about paper topics, things that they should think about writing about. Students come in to talk about jobs, you know, how to find their dream job or how to find, you know, just any job, how to, you know, to talk about, for those of you who are interested in public interest jobs, sometimes that information can be a little bit hard to find. So we have, you know, we have experience doing that, so it's one of the things that we can help you think through.
We have a listserv.
Oh yeah, we have a listserv with links and stuff on it. So you should all, on the sheet with the purple one, the pictures on it, that called the Women in the Law, that says Women in the Law program on it. If you look at the back, there are two important pieces of information on the back cover. One is
how to sign up for our listserv, and the other is how to find us. Come and visit. And, you know, it's terribly lonely to sit in office hours all by yourself. So I'm there, and she's there, so come by.
And the Women's Law Association has a listserv, so if there are kinds of questions that you don't want, like, everybody looking at, but, you know, is a more, is this really a student listserv? Like, what's this professor like, or what's this course like, or how hard is it, or what's fun, or, I mean, it's a great forum, even if you don't want to do anything with WLA. I mean, it's not like they feel exploited by it. They realize that they're just students who are interested, who would like to get the information that they send out, and would like to use the listserv, but aren't going to ever run an event.
So the Women's Law Association has board members have agreed to make themselves available, because I think between them, they've probably taken every gender class that we offer.
Yeah.
And so I haven't seen it, but my understanding is that they offered to talk to anyone else or who else about any of the classes that they've taken, and they put that out. It's now, they've circulated their email addresses. So take them up on that, because that's often a good social interest.